This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Since last week's terror alert in Britain, the way we travel and shop at airports has changed and could well change again. Right now, according to the Transportation Security Administration's website, passengers can take small doses of liquid medications in their carry-on luggage, but all other liquids and gels are banned. Though the alleged plot was disrupted before anything happened, the incident sent jitters through an industry that analysts say is just beginning to stabilize 5 years after 9/11. Nervous flyers now have another reason to take the car, and added delays at the security gate could drive business travelers to a video conference and send short-haul passengers to the train. And it's not just the airlines. The new travel rules have hit airport vendors. No more sales of duty-free liquor and perfume, no more purchases of forgotten items like mouthwash and shaving cream, and no more last-minute cups of coffee as you rush to the boarding gate. An estimated $25 billion is at stake from duty-free and travel sales at airports worldwide. Today we'll look at the security system in place at airports and what airlines and merchants are doing to adapt to the new rules. Later, guest political junkie Ron Elving. If you have questions about yesterday's primary in Nevada, George Allen's gaffe in Virginia, party switching in Kansas, or other news of the past political week, you can send us email now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, what's changed for airlines, airports, and airport businesses? If you've flown over the past week, what's changed? If you work in the airline industry, what's different for you? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And we begin with Chris Yates, an aviation security analyst at Jane's Transport. He joins us from the studios of the BBC in Bristol, in England. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be with you, Neil.
Air travel isn't quite back to normal, but some of the drastic restrictions imposed on flights between the UK and the US have loosened a bit. What's the latest on that?
As far as the loosening of the restrictions is concerned, yes, we can now take on some carry-on baggage, notably a briefcase with a laptop in, mobile phone, and all of the peripheral equipment that goes with that. However, as far as liquids are concerned, as far as cosmetic items are concerned, and all of the other things that you might buy in duty-free, those are restricted, certainly on transatlantic flights, not necessarily the case on intra-European or flights elsewhere in the world.
And U.S. domestic flights, those restrictions, there were fewer restrictions to begin with last week, but even those have eased up.
They have eased up somewhat, and that's all for the good as far as the industry is concerned. Some of the restrictions that were placed on flights, quite frankly, perhaps were somewhat ridiculous. At the end of the day, what are you going to do with a tube of toothpaste? Mm-hmm. That is one of the questions that has been asked quite constantly here in the United Kingdom.
Did last week's event expose a weakness in aviation security? I mean, it's this loophole of liquid explosives.
Yes, it did. At the end of the day, we've had a singular issue with specifically checkpoint security, the bits that you and I go through when we're boarding a flight, as opposed to whole baggage screening and all of the rest of that. Mm-hmm. We've had a singular issue with checkpoint security, not just since 9/11, but going back to 1995, 1996. It's an issue that has not been addressed because the focus of attention has been elsewhere. And we really need to get to grips with that particular area of security to ensure that those who would do us harm are not able to infiltrate themselves onto an aircraft through that checkpoint and carry out whatever they want to carry out.
And are we seeing just the beginning of broader changes that are going to be made, that have to be made to the security system as a whole?
I think we're going to have to certainly look at checkpoints and take a cold, hard look at how we do that process of screening people and their carry-on bags for the presence of explosive. At the end of the day, the technology that we've used for time immemorial at checkpoint has been metal detection and X-ray, and those two technologies don't cut it in respect of the current threats that we face.
And this is going to cost a pretty penny, presumably.
Not necessarily. The security industry has worked on solutions for checkpoint security for some considerable time now. There are a bunch of technologies out there that, yes, they have a price tag to them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to have to spend the $20 billion that the US government alone has spent on security since 9/11. We're talking about a cost some significant amount less than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I know sent shivers through the airline industry in this country was the idea that passengers would not be allowed to carry on things like mobile phones and communications devices and laptop computers. This would put a big crimp in business travel.
It certainly would put a big cramp on business travel, and for a number of reasons, not least of which is the fact that major airports around the world do have an issue with petty pilfering from passenger baggage. At the end of the day, you can't be assured that everybody handling the baggage and putting it onto aeroplanes and such like is as honest as they really should be. And at the end of if we're putting something like a $2,000 laptop into a briefcase and checking that in for a flight, is it going to be there when we get to the destination?
Also, that everybody wants to seemingly work on these things, or at least play games with them, while they're waiting for the plane and when they're on the plane. So that's a big deal for business travelers.
And yes, we do some serious work on our laptops when we're traveling as well. And, apart from playing solitaire or whatever the game might be, we get the spreadsheets out, we get the word processor out and so on. And if we can't do that, then that has an impact on our ability as businessmen to carry out whatever function we have to carry out when we get off the flight.
We're asking you to join us if you've been flying in the past week or so. What's changed? And also, if you work in the industry, what's changed for you? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Damon is on the line with us. Damon calling from Wichita, Kansas.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to say I love the show. I listen to it all the time.
I work for
a courier here in Wichita. Mm-hmm. that our main business is based out of Wichita Mid-Continent Airport. And we deliver luggage, which has been left behind or lost, on a different flight from the passengers. And I just wanted to say that our business has doubled since these new security rules have been passed.
Is that because a lot more luggage is being checked and therefore a lot more of it is being misplaced?
That's right, Neil. Yeah, the luggage that's checked is weighed, and there's a certain weight that the airplane has to be under in order to fly. And, more and more people can't take what they would normally take in their carry-ons, and so they're just shoving it in their checked baggage. Mm-hmm. And of course, we deliver the baggage that doesn't make it. So
how come it's always mine, Damon?
That's what everybody says, Neil.
All right. Well, I hope you're having a good time driving around with all that luggage in Wichita. Thanks very much for the call.
Hey, thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye. Not just Damon's work, but I also know that alternative things like private jet rentals, charters, that sort of thing, that's increased just in the past week. Isn't that right, Chris Yates?
Yes, indeed it is. The companies that operate private jets and some of the exclusively business flight operations around the world have seen quite a dramatic increase in their business. But just going back to what Damon was saying, there have been quite a lot of bags that have gone missing during this current security scare. British Airways alone here in the United Kingdom is suggesting that 10,000, possibly even 20,000 bags just for that airline have gone missing as they passed through London Heathrow. Now, if you consider the number of flights that operate through London Heathrow, you can do the multiple yourself and work out that all of the airlines are going to have a great deal of difficulty repatriating those bags with the owners.
Chris Yates, stay with us. We want to turn now to see how these new security measures are affecting the airline industry and traveling. Joining us to talk about that is Jim Corridor. He's an aviation equity analyst at Standards & Poor's, and he's with us from his office in New York. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Neil.
What effect have the events of the last week had on the airlines?
Well, there's been a minor impact both on bookings and cancellations, but most of the airlines that I've talked to and that have spoken about this issue have said that they're not seeing a major impact, that people are completing their trips, that bookings have not really fallen off the cliff. that they're continuing to book. But, I mean, you'd have to expect that business travelers in particular would be looking for alternative means, like you said, and Chris said just a minute ago, that private jet charters are up.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly business travelers who have been inconvenienced, that are not used to being inconvenienced in this way, are looking for alternatives.
And particularly you would think on short-haul flights, it doesn't take all that much less time to fly, for example, from New York to Washington than to take the train. Now that there's longer lines, there are more people taking the train.
Absolutely. An overwhelming reason on a short-haul flight to travel by air is because you can work on your laptop and you can sit in convenience and get some stuff done. If you have to sit on a two-hour security line, and in some cases may not even be able to work on the plane anyway, certainly that takes away that advantage.
And maybe we're one more incident away from something like that. The other thing, I did notice that stocks dropped somewhat, not precipitously last Thursday when this incident happened, but some people are saying that was as much due to oil prices as anything else.
Yeah, it was an interesting phenomenon because as soon as the news broke about the terror threats, the airline stocks opened up very weakly, but oil prices opened up even more weakly, I guess on worries, first of all, that airlines would use less oil if there was a major downturn, and also on worries of a global economic shock of some kind of terror threat. So oil prices opened up even more weak than airlines, and airline stocks, because airlines use so much oil, mm-hmm. they benefited from that and recovered later in the day.
And is it accurate to say that, in fact, people believe that the industry is more or less just beginning to stabilize 5 years after 9/11?
Yeah, we're expecting the airlines actually to continue to post a loss in 2006, but that's because companies like Delta Airlines and Northwest Airlines are going to have huge restructuring charges in bankruptcy. Ex them, the other major carriers that are operating out of bankruptcy are likely to return to profitability for the first time since before 9/11. And 2007 was expected to be a very strong year for the carriers as a whole, with the entire U.S. aviation industry poised to return to profitability. I think that thesis is still intact. We're more worried right now about oil prices than we are about security. Certainly security is something that both passengers and investors are going to have to deal with from now on.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the last week's news shows that terrorists are still targeting airlines. But I think they should be somewhat reassured by the fact that the plot was foiled, that security was up to the task in this case, and we have yet another thing to look out for.
All right. Stay with us as well. We're going to take a short break. And you listening, if you'd like to join the conversation, what's it been like for you this past week since the terror alert in Britain, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about new travel restrictions put in place after last week's news of a foiled plot to bomb airliners flying between Britain and the United States. So far, the U.S. travel industry remains resilient. So are travelers. But will that hold up? Should there be another scare or another incident? How about you? Do the new restrictions make a difference in your travel plans? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guests are Chris Yates, an aviation security analyst at Jane's Transport, and Jim Corridor, an aviation equity analyst at Standard & Poor's. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Greg. Greg's calling us from University Heights in Ohio.
Hi, Neil. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
That's good. I just want to relate. I got actually two sides to this. I did travel last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing is I traveled later in the day, and getting through wasn't as bad as I thought, because we kind of got prepared. I was traveling out of LaGuardia, which could be a difficult airport to travel. But
at the best of times, yes.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was a bad day to travel. There was weather that actually ended up affecting us more than the British, mm-hmm. British situation. But one thing that did help is for frequent travelers, elite status. There's for those that don't travel as much, they tend to take care of us a little bit more because we're on a loyalty type basis, and so there's a different check-in at the baggage, and in some airports there's also different check-in screening, and not as much less gear or anything like that, but just a more seasoned traveler that knows how to do the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one aspect. But I do have to travel quite a bit on in and out of New York, and usually those are 2-3 days, and there's a lot of changing in flights, and particularly day of, and it's so much more convenient to be able to carry on your luggage. And now with the additional task of having the check, it's going to make things a lot more difficult, and I'll have to plan around that, and it's you know, that it's inconvenient, but we will probably have to just adapt and go forward.
Yep, adapt and go forward. Jim Corridor, let me ask you, thus far, after 9/11, after other incidents, travelers have been resilient. They've been willing to adapt.
Well, after 9/11, travelers were resilient, but it took many years for them to return to the travel patterns that they had experienced prior to 9/11. In the first 3 months, through the end of 2001, air travel was down about 50%. So travelers were clearly frightened. They were worried about security, and rightly so. But it took until just this very year for passenger levels to surpass those levels of prior to 9/11. Mm-hmm. So the industry is resilient. They did survive the downturn, but not all the carriers did, obviously. There were several bankruptcies among the major carriers, largely because of the downturn.
And Chris Yates, let me ask you, these expedited systems that do exist at various airports or various airlines, are they going to survive this, do you think?
I think yes. We operate a process for frequent flyers, those who are known to the authorities. The U.S. has a system of its own where those of us who are prepared to provide our fingerprints and handprints to the U.S. authorities are afforded certain other benefits, such as expedited immigration controls and so on. Those systems will remain because at the end of the day, we are known travelers and we present no risk to the safety of flight.
Okay. Greg, thanks for the call.
All right. Thanks, Neil.
Bye-bye. And Jim Corridor, before we let you go, are airlines going to be thinking about reducing fares, which have gone up considerably?
I don't think so. I think that particularly because in the U.S. industry, there has been such capacity cuts by companies like United, who went through bankruptcy, U.S. Airways and America West, which merged. Delta and Northwest are now in bankruptcy and are cutting capacity. The supply and demand equation has shifted more in favor of the airlines over the past couple of years. So there's less seats chasing more passengers. So I think that equation means that most of your listeners will continue to pay more.
Jim Corridor, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil.
Jim Corridor, an aviation equity analyst at Standard & Poor's, and he spoke to us from his office in New York City. Let's get another caller on the line. This is David. David's calling us from Miami.
Yes. Hi, Neil. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I am a flight attendant for one of the big three out of Miami. And one of the things that I've noticed, even for us, I think that the traveling public is not even aware that the first 2 days of this entire incident, we were not excluded from what was happening to the general public. You know, they still take our toothpaste and our shampoo and our deodorant. And I even know a couple of federal air marshals that was happening to them as well. Once everything kind of got ironed out, we were allowed, of course, to bring our toiletries on board, as we are now. But it's been a little bit difficult, and I think that the traveling public needs to be aware that, you know, as we are trained for their safety, we are constantly suspicious of individuals on our plane. I think your last caller made the comment that the general traveling public, we have nothing to worry about. Well, that's not true. It happens every day when we get intoxicated patients on board, when we get patients that have not taken their medications, as what happened to the individual, you know, in the Miami airport.
Yes. And these are a genuine concern. Have you been flying this last week, David?
Oh, absolutely, every day.
And are people paying attention to these rules? Or are they trying to smuggle that tube of toothpaste or that bottle of shampoo?
They do try to smuggle on board. To me, at least the American traveling public have a sense of complacency about what's going on in the rest of the world. We're not too worried about terror in our airlines, although we should be. So they do. They consistently try to sneak things on board or hide the water bottle in a big bag or, and what people need to realize is that, you know, they're not taking your tube of toothpaste. We're more concerned about what's in that tube than toothpaste.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, David. And by the way, listeners, you can go to our website if you want to look and see what's allowed. That's at npr.org. There's a list of allowed items or disallowed items. Chris Yates, as we look at this technology, there is a device that is in use in some cases in Britain, a scanning device that indeed looks at the whole body. That is, some privacy experts say, you know, they're worried about it because you get a very good look at the person's body. Are we going to have to put up with technology like that, more intrusive kinds of searches, do you think?
I think we're going to have to put up over a period of time with a certain amount of intrusiveness as we're travelling. The technology that you're talking about is a device that looks at the entire body and gives the operator an image of the entire body intended to identify anything that might happen to be strapped to the person, whether it be a plastic explosive, whether it be a handgun, whether it be a knife, whatever. Mm. Now, I've seen that device operating in Domodedovo Airport in Moscow. I've seen it operating at a number of other airports around the world. And I have to say that, there are certain privacy issues regarding that sort of technology, but the manufacturers have, over a period of time, dealt with the issues that would normally tax all of us if we were travelling and being electronically undressed in the security checkpoint.
Yeah, it's a little like passing before Superman's X-ray vision, isn't it?
Indeed.
Another sector of the travel industry that's felt the squeeze from tighter security measures are retailers, restaurants, duty-free shops, newsstands who operate at airports. And joining us now to talk about the impact on them is Barney Perella, Managing Director of Innova Aviation Consulting. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to see you.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Last Thursday, some airport stores simply closed rather than take the risk of selling banned item to passengers. What's going on now? Are places adapting?
Well, they are adapting, as the passengers are as well. And obviously everyone has been impacted somewhat dramatically and somewhat immediately. I think a large part of this is just the surprise factor.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a new situation, someone flips the switch and all of a sudden the rules have changed. Obviously procedures, contracts, arrangements, the way of doing business changes or needs to change very, very rapidly, and that's a difficult thing. If you look around the U.S., we're getting reports in from airports throughout the country. There are about 450 air carrier airports around the U.S., and they are all getting somewhat different reporting back in. For example, major international airports, obviously, that depend a large part on duty-free sales,
mm-hmm.
other sort of high-end cosmetics, other things that fall under the banned substance regulation, they're having substantial impacts. Others, the smaller airports, the regional airports, those that are primarily involved in domestic traffic, I'd say the impact's been relatively modest. I think it also depends on who you are at the airport. For example, we've been talking already on the show about the airline impacts.
Sure.
And they are, of course, a major player at the airport. If you look at the concession side, the vendors, the food and beverage vendors, the impacts are differential. Mm. Food and beverage, for example, after 9/11, when the higher level security restrictions came in.
Let me just interrupt you. Our guest, Chris Yates in London, I forgot, needs to leave now, and we promised we would let him go. Chris Yates, I wanted to thank you very much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure to be with you this day, Neil.
Chris Yates, aviation security analyst at Jane's Transport. And Barney Perella, please go on. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No problem. I was just about to say that we've seen an increase in food and beverage sales dramatically since 9/11 because mm-hmm. of the reduction in food being served on board airplanes.
We're also spending more time at the airport, getting there earlier.
Dwell time has increased. Perhaps stress has increased as well. I think liquor sales have been up as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the current environment, I think it's been so immediate and so targeted on the creams, the gels, and the fluids that people are not quite sure what to do with it. So I think a very big part of the going forward solution to this is going to be much more clarity with respect to what it is that people mm-hmm. can and cannot do. Hopefully, whatever is decided as the rule stays as a rule for a while so the vendors can adjust. And then, of course, somebody has to incur, and I guess it would be the traveling public, the added cost of all of these various activities.
Sure. Here's an email we got from Dustin in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Many of my friends travel to Europe and Canada quite frequently. We came to the conclusion that perhaps duty-free shops should offer free or cheap shipping. In fact, we concluded this would make us want to buy more goods. However, some laws may need to be changed regarding the shipping of liquor.
Right. The duty-free operators are obviously very heavily impacted. They're looking now at more arrivals duty-free,
mm-hmm.
where the airline is, of course, the secure conduit for these goods in any case. So the purchases would be delivered to passengers as they arrive. Shipping, of course, free or cheap means that somebody has to, you know, swallow the cost, if you will. It becomes a competitive issue. I think the broader issue with respect to duty-free and other kinds of things that are brought on board is the question of the airline's role. Mm-hmm. The airline right now is the provider of air transportation. They provide certain amenities on board based upon what they do. If the new regime or the new normal basically makes them sort of the shopping cart for all of the things that people would rather not have floating around in the airport, that is a substantial burden and a substantial cost.
We're talking about what's changed at airport businesses and with the airlines a week after the terror alert last Thursday in Britain. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. That's the number for the Political Junkie segment, which is coming up in a few minutes, too. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Ray. Ray's calling us from Kansas City.
Good day, sir. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I was traveling in Reno Airport and Las Vegas Airport on Friday of last week, mm-hmm. and I felt the victim of price gouging by a food vendor, as none of the vendors would allow you to take a bottle or container or anything away from the area. They forced you to purchase a cup for 5 cents a cup.
Really?
Yep.
Have you heard about that, Barney?
That's a new one on me.
Were people putting up with it, Ray?
Well, they had a choice of either go thirsty or buy a cup for a nickel.
Well, typically the airport operator, who's the landlord there, has a contract with anybody that's doing business on the airport. That strikes me as something that you should contact your local airport management about. It seems rather outside of the box.
Ray, good luck next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Not necessarily gouging, but Ray brings to mind. Are there opportunities presented here for new kinds of retailing?
Oh, I think there are. Anybody's inconvenience is somebody else's opportunity. And to the extent that these regulations or whatever the new normal is kind of sit still long enough for people to understand what they are and to plan based on that scenario, people will then adjust their business plans. New businesses will come forward. For example, the whole arrivals
duty-free
or sundries. I mean, all of the things that you can't take on board when you arrive at baggage claim, and presumably there are a lot more bags coming out of that bag belt.
Carousel cosmetics.
People standing around for whatever period of time it is waiting for their bag, they have time to shop.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the opportunity for people to buy things that they need, which they were not able to bring on board.
Let's talk with Tarek. Tarek calling us from Napa in California.
Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
I've been waiting 5 years nearly to tell you that on 9/11, my wife and I were some 12 hours away from home. Actually, it was only 5 or 6 hours, but it turned out to be 12. And I'll never forget your calm, cool, collected voice that day. I don't remember your co-host, but I certainly remember you. And you were our link to the world as we drove across the Midwest. Scanning the dial, we found ourselves back at one NPR station or another, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much for
frequent
that.
Thank you, sir. As a frequent business traveler, here's my question. Presumably, everything that's on the secure side of the security check in the convenience stores at the airports in the terminal, presumably all of that is safe. So I'm wondering, why can't I pick up a bottle of water? I understand not carrying my own bottle of water or my own bottle of wine or liquor onto the airplane, but why couldn't I get inside the airport, inside the secure zone, and then carry it on? That's the part I don't understand. Presumably nothing that would be sold could be combined to make an explosive device or a combustible mm-hmm. device. So
yeah, Barney,
maybe somebody can explain that to us, and I'll take my answer off the air. And well, thank you again for your program.
And thanks for the kind words, Tarek. Why is it...
I think that's a very good question. I mean, the presumption is and should be that everything beyond security that's in the terminal, licensed for sale at the airport, has been through a security check of its own. I mean, all the vendors, all the caterers, everybody is supplied to those shops from sources through the airport.
And, of course, the vendors would be heartbroken if they were the only source of material you could take safely on the plane. See if we can squeeze Jill in. Jill's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a point to make earlier about your business travelers. I've flown twice since the new regulations went into place, and I'm on my way to the airport now. But mostly, the man who mentioned preferred status for business travelers and how that expedites things for us, and it does to an extent. but we still have to leave all the liquids and gels, just like everyone else, or check our bag. And if you're a business traveler, you're not usually, you know, you're in a hurry. You want to be safe, too, but if they lose your bag, you're not at the destination long enough to retrieve it, and it ends up having to follow you home. And I think you were speaking earlier about the X-ray machine and people having privacy issues with it, and I can certainly understand the privacy issue with it, and I wouldn't really be a huge fan of it, but if it would allow me to take my bag on the plane with me, I would gladly walk through one.
All right, Jill, good luck catching your flight.
Thanks.
And we're going to give Jill the last word. Barney Perella, thanks very much for being with us. Barney Perella, Managing Director of Innova Aviation Consulting, based in Bethesda, Maryland. He was with us here in Studio 3A.
Thank you, Neil.
And when we come back, Ron Elving pinch hits for Ken Rudin as our political junkie returns. It's the talk of the nation from NPR News.